Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Felita Williams, your faith-based community nurse, and we're in the trenches again tonight. We're talking about health and wellness, as well as spiritual impacts on our physical and mental issues. And so before I get started, my scripture, which is one of my favorite scriptures, is Psalms 91, verses 1 and 2. He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God. In Him I trust. And so tonight I wanted to deal with mental health and its impact on our society as a whole. I was a little disturbed, and I have not become desensitized to mass shootings, but the fact that we're continually having these mass shootings, and I just listen to what everybody is saying in their perspective, in terms of how to handle everything. And I just listen because everybody has a what they consider a alternative to the mass shootings that we're seeing. And I just kind of listen. Big thing is the gun control, which I don't have any issue with. More mental health intervention. I don't have any problems with that. The involvement of the family, a definite yes. But these things are all good, but they're focusing on everything but the spiritual aspect of it too. And when I look at these shootings, I don't look at race nor socioeconomic status, because what I'm seeing, it involves everybody. Okay? And so it's not because of an individual race or socioeconomic status that we're seeing these mass shootings. It could be anybody. It could be people that have all the advantages in the world, even down to people who have no advantages. So I don't want to focus on that, but I do know that the impact that we're seeing with the mass shootings is definitely placing a strain on the mental health of individuals. And so I was, when I looked at that, and of course I feel bad. I feel bad about the adults, but just the children, that lives who was taken, who really didn't have a chance to really experience life for any length of time. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about the impact of mass shooting on the mental health, but I also want to bring in the spiritual aspect of it, because what I'm listening to, we're looking to for solutions, which I don't disagree with some of the solutions that they're looking using, and as far as intervention, But the one thing we have to do is we have to involve the church. The church has to be involved in this. In my experience, just working with young people, when young people do not have a good, let's start with a good family foundation, because I've worked with underprivileged children for many, many years, and their family may not be totally intact to the point it's completely healthy. But we would bring those kids to church. We would take them on outings. We would take them different places. Some of the kids had never been out of the city or even out of the state. And so we took a lot of time. We spent a lot of money investing in these kids, trying to impact their lives. Sometimes everything they need, they don't get at home, but we try to be a fill-in or an adjunct for the family. And that's what they did in the I hate to say the old days, but our forefathers, everybody intervened. Everybody. It wasn't because my children are grown, I don't have any involvement. That is not what we did in the past. In the past, everybody was responsible for the development, growth and development of a child, even down to feeding them. You know, it was a community thing. And we know with our jet setting, and a lot of times we're away from that immediate family that can lend a helping hand, and then you have families that have their own families, or they have jobs and they have their own lives. And that's one of the things that we have lost as a society, is the closeness of one another. That's a big loss, and that's my personal opinion, is that we don't have the closeness of our society that we have had in the past. And had nothing to do with color barriers or anything. You just have lost the, you know, that close-knitness. So when I was looking at this, it was talking about how these mass, the stress of these mass shootings is just causing a cascade of collective traumas. They're so regular that it's really putting a significant impact on America's mental health. Stress is increasing. There's dulling of the compassion in ways that we have to demand like a broader concern, and we have to be more engaged. And also there has to be there has to be change. As you know, the more mass shootings that we see repeatedly erupting in our schools and in our grocery stores and other establishments, even our churches, most Americans live in fear. And I know there are a lot of people that don't like to go to crowded areas. They minimize going shopping. They minimize going in restaurants or shopping malls and things like that. It just puts society as a whole in a state of fear. Now, some people may not admit it, but, you know, because they don't want to show that fear, but it is statistics shown. It definitely is impacting our children and our teens. They're already in a mental health crisis, and so this ongoing violence really erodes their sense of well-being, their safety, and the effectiveness known to be central for their health development. And if you look at the interviews, the one thing you're seeing is kids don't want to go back to school. They're scared to go back to school. Uvalde, you know, they don't have that school there anymore. So it really is an impact on our mental health. Now, we know cause stress really got more embedded with the pandemic, but also the economic challenges that we're seeing, the political polarization, the what we see politically is being talked about. I mean, I look at our politicians, and it's just stressful. It's just ridiculous when we see how they interact with each other as supposedly mature adults. We're looking at climate-related disasters. Look at Mississippi, where they had the tornado, and the area that was really hit very hard is one of a lower socioeconomic status. And when you look at all of this, all of that is contributing to trauma that America is facing as a nation. And then to add the mass shooting on top of that, it makes it even more difficult. According to this article, one of the professors of psychiatry stated, you know, we're not starting at a place where everybody's healthy and thriving. And I hadn't thought about it in that term, but we're not. Our reserves are depleted as a nation, and the young people are suffering. So whereas we as a nation had more confidence and security in our day-to-day living, that no longer exists. So we're not starting at a healthy place mentally. Fear of mass shootings has left a lot of people feeling stressed. They say about a third of adults now say, as I said, they avoid certain places. And the frequency of these mass shootings amplified by, you know, the near constant access to media coverage of such events also helps to impact our mental health. And that was, I don't mind media covering things, but sometimes I look at the interviews afterwards, it's sometimes it's just redundant. I mean, and they're asking things and not realizing the impact that they're making on people who are listening, because everybody's not mentally healthy enough to see this over and over again. And this is what it's done. It's repeated over and over and over again. And some people for this report that they're panicky. Some people are distressed. And then some people are just numb. They've seen it so much. They've heard it so much. They just become numb to the situations. Now, for the survivors or people who witness these mass shootings, the suffering tends to be more severe. You know, studies have documented that there's been an increase in PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder, major depression, anxiety disorder, substance use disorder, and a whole lot of other things for people who have survived mass shootings. Now, We know that this is going on, and we see it from day to day. But one thing, the religious communities play a significant role in efforts to reduce gun violence, including advocating, you know, for common sense gun reforms. They also should work to help with the mental issues that people are experiencing. Guns don't kill. I hear that all the time. People kill. Okay, and that's true. But we have to look at where our society is mentally, and I'm not against guns, you know, but we have to look at what type of guns do we need for protection, you know. And I was really surprised because this lady that went in this recent one and with that Covenant school was 28 years old and a female. So we know now that the mental health of everybody is being impacted. So it's not just kids. It is adults, too. Religious organizations can make a difference. They can, you know, be involved as a sense of a sacred organization or even obligation or even moral conviction and whatever it is. And you do have, as a religious community, we can be involved in violence interruption programs. We can be involved in education. We can be involved in counseling. We can be involved in advocacy. We should all be working to help heal our society. Sometimes we can't always say certain things. We have to be careful in what we say, how we address things. But we can intervene. And this is the one part of what I see when I look at the news that is not being addressed equally with the mental health and the physical impact. We're never going to solve anything until we balance out the total man that is mind, body, and soul. We have to deal with the physical, the mental, and the spiritual. And it starts by intervening with starting with our young people, because for the most part, it is a lot of young people, although we are seeing some adults. But we really need to intervene with everybody, but in particular our young people. Our young people are not really mentally developed to handle a lot of the situations that is presenting in our society now, because there are different things they're just not taught. One of the things that we were concerned about, this was even years ago, is that children raising children, that, you know, young children having children and not having the capability of instilling in them the things that are necessary to make them productive members of society, not instilling them good coping mechanisms. And I can remember when we were growing up, you know, you had disagreements, but it wasn't a thought that we were going to go out and kill them, or we were going to go out and kill the family, or we were going to just go out and shoot up everybody. We were taught, whether direct or indirect, but we were taught coping mechanisms, how to deal with different situations. And that is the one big thing I think needs to be incorporated in our school system. And I've worked the school system, so I have a really good knowledge of that. And that is crisis management. I know a lot of times kids would come, they would be upset about something, and yes, they have to be punished. But schools are too busy to sit down and really talk with them to see what was going on. As a nurse, I had more time. I would talk to them, and it was just really surprising to find out some of the issues these kids had to deal with in their homes, and you know, and it impacted their mental health, and in turn, they lashed out physically. So I think crisis intervention, and this does include having the church involved, would be beneficial with what we see going on in our community. And one thing that they have found out that finding comfort in one's faith and faith community is particularly important to helping mass shooting survivors hold on to hope amidst their horrible tragedies. And they found that in mass shootings, that if the community, the faith community, rallied around them, that there was a massive difference in the way that they handled their situation. So as a faith community, we do play an important role on the physical and mental well-being of our society at large. After mass shooting, those people who felt supported by their religious community, they really, according to the statistics, they really experienced fewer symptoms of depression and PTSD, and their faith didn't suffer as much. But we don't, our society as a whole, do not have a, I won't say they don't have a faith base, but for the most part, this it's not a grounded faith base relationship. And then with the pandemic, that made it even worse because a lot of churches shut down. And even now, a lot of people are afraid to go to church because of COVID. So we just, I think as a faith-based community, we're going to have to really find ways to impact our society. Now, the church that we live in is of lower socioeconomic standards, and they have a lot of issues, but what we have started doing, and we've been doing it, is intermingling with the people in the community. We started out by, you know, several times a year, we would just cook food and take house to house, or we would have things on the outside like a street service and serve, you know, foods and stuff like that, getting to know the community, letting them know we're here not to judge, but to help. And help, and you know, them, and to improve the area in which we live. And then on Fourth Sundays, we would have dinner, and whatever was left over, we pack up, go out, and give it to the community. Those people know us there now. We've been there for a while, and they know us. And if they are having some issues, they will walk across the street to the church. And that's where we're going to have to. We got. I mean, I know a lot of people are afraid, and this is a bad community, and this is going on there. But we have to find some way to get into these communities and make an impact on them. There was a finding that suggested that people in communities affected by mass shooting who identify as a person of faith or if they are open to faith would benefit from being encouraged to utilize their religious community as a source of social and religious support. And then when they come to us, then we have to be careful in what we say to them. We can be the buffer against any negative trauma reaction, which will place them in a better position for recovery. So if they have that confidence in us and if they know that we're there for them, you know, we can be that that mediator, that buffer, so that they will, you know, they're going to have some issues, but we can buffer that for them. When a person has suffered loss a really great loss, like those parents that lost their young children, okay, they're going to experience a lot of things. It's the things that I mentioned, as well as they may have some antisocial behavior. Some of them have prolonged and complicated grief. It just does not just go away because now the news is not broadcasting anymore. I was looking at the when they were talking about the shooting at that Covenant school, and a lady who had been involved in mass shooting and lost a child was there as support. Those are the things that that we should be highlighting the most. Not the negative part, and it is, we can't help that this happened, but I think we need to put more highlight on the negative part, I mean the positive part of it, in that, you know, we're here for you, the faith community is here for you, whatever we can do, you know, we are here. We can offer them a place together. We can pray for them. We can counsel them. Any support that they need. One of the things that that we don't need to really focus on is you don't tell people, well, it's going to get better, you're going to get over it, or there's a reason for that. That they're not hearing that now. They can't understand that now. The biggest thing that I have found when I'm dealing with, and I've dealt a lot with mental health because I work with veterans, the one thing that I find that is very, very positive and effective when you're dealing with people that are having mental health issues, is just sit there and listen. Let them talk it out. Let them work through their grief. Let them work through their hurt. Let them work through their tragedy. Show interest. You know, let them know you're here. I'm listening, you know. When they finish and I say, and after I do the professional part, and I'll tell them, you know, I'll pray for you, and if I can help you in any way, I'm always available to see you. So we just got to find a way to just rally around these folks and give them some comfort and minister in any way that we can to help them to get through these situations. It's just tragic that we're having to do this, but, you know, that's the way it is, and we can't change that. Sometimes, too, we have to understand that we cannot, these people are at a very critical and vulnerable time in their life, and we just have to be careful with the wordings that we say. You know, these people are not being punished. People have not been abandoned by God. They are not untrustworthy. I don't care who they are. The loss of a loved one is the loss of a loved one, no matter what. I like this scripture where it says that in Psalms 46:1, and it talks about looking to God for strength and support and guidance and experiencing him as an ever-present help in trouble. And that's what we are there. We're there to strengthen. We're there to support. We're there to guide, you know, and just let them know, you know, they have not been abandoned. I mean, it's hard. It's difficult. But to lose loved ones when they're out doing something that is just everyday chores, like going shopping or eating lunch somewhere or going to school, you know, because, I mean, it's just very difficult. We don't want to get into any kind of theology about them, but we just want to, you know, the biggest thing that I find is just being there. I just recently had a pastor, and the reason she calls me is because she's a veteran, and her husband's a veteran. Her husband had ALS, and so she had her mother, and she just recently lost a mother. Her mother was 97, and she texted me and told me that her mom had passed Monday, so I called her. And she started talking. She said, oh, let me call you back. And I said, okay. And so when she called back, you know, I said, I'm sorry to hear about the passing of your mom. And then she started talking. And I just listened. And she said, I had my crying moments. I'm going to miss her. She said, but I pray. She said, if I can release her to you, I will be okay. And, of course, she had had she was a diabetic. She had a lot of problems. But she was 97, too. So she would always call me if different things were going on. And I would give her some advice. And finally, her kidneys shut down. They wanted to put her on dialysis. And she said no. She said she didn't want to go into a nursing home. And she just prayed. She said, I just prayed. And I sit there, and she talked to me, I guess, about 30, 45 minutes. And I sit and listen. And when she finished, I said, well, I said, God answered your prayer. She went with him. She didn't go to a nursing home. She didn't go on dialysis. And I told her, anytime you need me, I'm still here for you. But I just listened. And that's, she was saying how people were saying this and saying that. I just listened because She was just going, emotions were everywhere. But the bottom line was, because of her deep faith in God, her bottom line was the comfort that she had if her mother had to go, that when she went straight to God. She wouldn't go anywhere else. She didn't, not even home, not even to a nursing home, not even to a palliative care unit, but she, that she would go to God. And so that's why I say listening to me is just ultimately the most important part of what is going on in our society now with this mass shooting. And I know a lot of people are, they hear it, and here we go again, another school, another shopping center, another mall, another church. We cannot, not the the attitude that as a faith-based person that we're going to take, because all lives are precious in the sight of God, we have got to take a different stance than the world takes. And we, you know, we just have to be there. I think one great thing that I have learned, we had a young man that lives across the street, and you know, I've seen him go through that metamorphosis where he was just come in drunk, trauma, things going on in his life. And now, and I see the young men, even my son, just, I saw him come in and I'm wondering why the guy didn't come up to church. He's down there talking to my son. My son's just having a conversation with him, patting him on the back. Yeah, okay. We have to, that's the same attitude we have to take with these people who are going through this trauma. Listen to them. People are experiencing trauma every day. It may not be mass shooting, other traumas that they're experiencing, because life is throwing a lot at us. And in the climate that we're in, it's not a wholesome climate. So it is left up to us as faith believers to intervene and to help in any way we can. We have to just find a way, you know. You may have to interact different with certain people, but we just have to be there. And if nothing but a strength, if nothing but I'm praying for you. I talked to a young lady. I go to a grocery store. There's one grocery store I go to. Well, I got two of them, but this one I go to. And she came, and she was so nice when I first went. She first started working there. And I went up to her, and I was going to self-checkout. I hate self-checkout. I hate it with a passion. So I was trying to get out of there. She said, I'll ring up your groceries for you. I said, okay. And then she told me her name, and I said, well, I am so glad to meet you. And I said, now you be blessed. And she said, okay. So I went back another time, and I gave her one of our tracts with our church information on it. And every time I would go in, I said, where is she? She said, she's off today. So every time I go in, I would look for her. One day, I said, well, how are you doing? And she said, I'm getting by. And then she told me that her daughter was suffering from mold poisoning and had been out of school since February. I would never known that if I had not, you know, taken the time not to, just to be nice to her, just to talk to her. You don't know what people are going through. And just taking the time, and I've been going in there for months, and she never mentioned it. And then she finally told me, she said, but she's getting better. And I said, well, okay, I'm going to pray for her and you. And she said, oh, thank you so much, and she hugged me. So we, you know, and that's one thing we're taught. You have to take the time to talk to people. And even like when you go to restaurants or you go to the grocery stores, people may not do, you know, may have things going on in their mind. We can't get upset because sometimes our intervention, it will be probably be the only intervention they get to help them through their crisis. And so we have to be more open to the society that we live in and really work on, being that buffer or that mediator between what people are going through and helping them through that and just supporting them. And at this time, they don't need a lot of preaching. Just knowing you're there. I mean, people just knowing you're there to comfort them and support them and hold them up is a big impact. So that is it for me tonight. Questions or comments? Okay.
My comment is that what you said, what you've been talking about, is the absolute truth. I've been a trained trauma crisis responder for going on now 30 years. I was a police chaplain there in Baltimore for 15, and I was the coordinator for 5 of those 15. And we had police command pager. And one of the things I always did was pray it before I even left the house. And when I show up sometime, I wouldn't have to say a word. And I never went out there talking about God. I allowed them to see the God in me. And as a result of that, I was able to meet them where they were in their troubles and help them to provide some type of guidance, whether they had used their weapon to kill somebody, I mean to take a life, or whether it was they were injured. I was not being judgmental because I understood why the department called me in to provide spiritual guidance and direction for the officers and their families. And then in terms of the church, most churches, they don't open their doors. And one of the things we did there in East Baltimore, on Friday night, we had churches to open their doors to the young people. And because a lot of them, they had nowhere to go. They just hung on the street. And we had different type of activities. It wasn't we in there proselytizing. Mm-hmm. We had activities for them. And one incident in the community where the 5 little kids was burned up, what we did, the church that was in that neighborhood, we had the young people coming in there, the children, and we used different, like we had people they colored. They had to color their feeling. How you feel now? Or they had to draw. Yeah. Draw their feelings or write about it. And that way, young as they were, and we're talking about kids who was in like the 3rd and 4th and 5th grade, and they started dealing with what it was inside of them that it came out. And we were able there to help them to understand what they were going through. And the other thing is that we learned that listening is a key. Listen. Just listen to people. Most of the time we go there, we have the answer and we want to tell people. But it was more like Jesus and Peter. Peter told Jesus that he wanted to walk out there on that water, and he started walking, and he got all happy and he started drowning. And Jesus didn't go up there berating him, browbeating him. Jesus just reached his hand out and told him very gently that, you know, what his problem was, what caused him to start to drown. But that is true. The church does have a role. Yeah. But most churches, what they wind up doing, all you need is Jesus. Just give me Jesus, you'll be all right. Oh, you ain't pray hard enough. You need to pray. People don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
They're in crisis.
Yeah. Well, I know we have several young people. We have one young guy that him and his mom divorced. So one of the young ministers likes to hunt, and so he takes them out hunting. Hiking,
mm-hmm.
I think they went out hiking. They're going out hiking this Saturday. And then we have another mother. She has four kids. Two of them are boys. And apparently they were having some issues at school. And it's just three boys, but the third was a baby. Anyway, what they did is some Sundays they would leave them. They would stay there all day with the other young guys, and they would help clean up the church. They would go out to eat. They would go do some fun stuff. We just got to me, and I've always said this, and I'm glad we do this because I've always been a proponent of this. We got to reach the young people because
mm-hmm.
I'm not saying we don't need to reach adults, but these young people, the adults, a lot of them just not doing because they don't want to do, and they don't. But young people, a lot of them don't have the guidance they need. They don't have the support
mm-hmm.
that they need, and a lot of young people have a lot. And I've seen it. I've worked with it. Even young adults, like in their teens, 18, 19, they don't have the self-esteem that we had at that age.
True.
You know. They somehow or another, they do not feel their worthiness like we did when we were growing up, you know, and even my kids. Because I can look at them. They know what they want. They go after it. But everybody is not in that place. And so mentally, we have got to impact them to a point where they will feel good about themselves. When you feel good about yourself, people say things, but if you feel good about yourself, it doesn't change how you feel about yourself. We have an organization, it's a 501c3, and it was developed out of the fact that we wanted to help kids that were at a disadvantage by offering them a lot of activities to take them out of their surroundings, even if it was just temporarily. And I'm telling you, a lot of some of them we lost, but a lot of them, they'll come back to me. They'll come by, and some of them I don't remember because I've been there so long. Say, you don't remember me? And I said, no. And sometimes I do it, sometimes I don't. I said, oh, okay, I know who you are. So they got pictures of them. So, I mean, it does take time, and it takes a lot of our effort and our energy. But you're right. You know, we don't want to leave Jesus out, but you got to know where to place them. Because if you do what you're supposed to do, they'll see Jesus.
Yep.
Because
the
Jesus in you shows out in them, and you don't have to mention his name. But they can see by your actions, and that's what we have to do. But anyway, okay, if no more comments or questions, that's it for me tonight. We just have to keep praying for our society at large and what we're going through right now.
All right,
so
thank you.
So you all have a good evening.